Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, your Owlpost is freshly delivered this week, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the ever-delightful, effervescent Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Yay! Hey, everybody, we're back.
I had to take a week off. I needed to go drink away some of my pain, so yeah. Sorry about that.
You know, vacations happen. Vacation is an important thing, so, in fact... Yeah, as we're recording, it's the Labor Day weekend, so which is really exciting. I love the fact that we have a 3-day weekend. I'm like, thank God. So nobody cares about that. You're not listening to that for life updates. You're listening because we're here with one of the most important chapters of all of Harry Potter, which is chapter 37. The Lost Prophecy, which means that this is the penultimate chapter as well of The Order of the Phoenix, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I don't think we have... We have one?
Yeah, one chapter left. Yeah.
Two, maybe?
Nope,
after
just one.
I haven't actually looked. Yeah, we're basically at the end, y'all, of this book.
It's crazy. And I'm excited to dive into the... Half-Blood Prince, because it has never been one of my favorite books of the series, so I'm really interested to go back and reread it this way, where we just do it one chapter at a time and kind of digest it that way and see if it really,
see,
you know, if it does anything
different
to...
perspective on
yeah,
it.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So, because sometimes when you do something slowly, it actually helps, you know, because you can see more of all those connections and stuff.
Well,
so really excited
about
that.
Yeah, and sometimes when you do it with someone else too and talk it through, you probably won't find it your favorite book, but maybe you'll enjoy it more than you have in the past. So
yeah,
we'll see. And if not, you're entitled to not enjoy it as well, just to be clear.
Well, what's great though is that people are enjoying Owlpost because we've got some new reviews. One is over here on Apple Podcasts. It says 5 stars, great podcast by Pang Diddy, and they said, I just started this podcast about 2 weeks ago, and since I drive for my job, it gives me something cool to listen to while working. I listen to about 8 to 10 a day, so I'll be sad when I get caught up, but congratulations on the baby, Drea. That's how far back
yeah,
I am now.
She's going to be 2 here shortly. Thanks.
Yeah.
When he gets to this one, like 2 years later. Oh,
I love
my.
It. It's so great. And they said, thanks for keeping the Harry Potter world alive by talking about it. And we really appreciate that. And gosh, 8 to 10 episodes of us a day.
I don't want to listen to 8 to 10 episodes of us a day.
I don't know whether to say thank you or apologize.
Well, we'll say thank you for the review and for the listens. And we hope that it's not as painful as maybe you and I think it might be. Yeah,
that's true.
And I will say
yeah.
I am really enjoying Absolutely. Everyone's really clever usernames whenever they leave reviews.
Yeah,
so interesting.
It's a lot of fun.
All right, continue, sorry.
No, and we got an email too from Vanessa, and she said, hi, I've been binging Owlpost since the start of the summer and finally caught up. I've never listened to podcasts, but when I found Owlpost, I just fell in love. You guys make the conversation both fun and serious while also analyzing each and every detail that most people tend to skip over. I especially enjoyed the analysis of the characters because you both take everything into consideration when forming your statements on the characters. Listening to the podcast is a great way of relaxing and jumping into something that I love. I don't usually talk about my opinion on books and movies because they differ greatly from others. I'm grateful to say that 9 out of 10 times we share the same opinion, and even when I don't feel like it's a big deal because you guys often have your own disagreement. I find most people make the disagreements a big deal, but the way in which you guys respect each other makes for a great welcoming atmosphere for the podcast. I'm extremely grateful for having found this podcast and have shared it with all the Potterheads I know. Although I'm emailing, I will give this podcast a 10 out of 5 stars.
Aww, thanks. I also really appreciate, yeah. and it's one of the reasons why I love working with Matt, is that you know, we do get to have a different opinion. I think that's so important to take a variety of approaches and kind of everyone has their own life experiences and their own perspective and their own, you know, way that they're processing through and what things mean to them. And I think it's important that multiple perspectives get shared and that in a respectful way, you know, I think that's so important. So I'm really glad that Vanessa appreciates that and that we're able to communicate that through this podcast. So that gives me the warm and fuzzies.
Well, and I think something that I really appreciate about what you said, Vanessa, it means a lot to hear in the, I think, the milieu of fandom we live in, where everything is either the worst or the best, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of in between, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of ability to have disagreement without people like getting to the point where it feels like they hate each other. And I just, you know, I think that the fact that we are able to bring our own opinion to the podcast and yet respect one another is important. And I think it's just, it's important in all of life. It's not just fandom, but I feel like this is something that we're just missing in life in general. So we really appreciate the fact that you can say that about the podcast, because that's kind of one of the reasons why we do it. You know, we want people to be able to voice opinion about something and be able to disagree about something, but be doing it in a way that puts it into context. Like, you know, in the end, Harry Potter's entertainment. And so if we disagree on it, something like that, it's not an ultimate thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about this on the show. Yeah, Harry Potter is not a capital T truth, right? That's not what we're disagreeing about. We're disagreeing about at most minor T truths, right? So
there's her 1 out of 10 that she disagrees with. Harry Potter is a capital T truth.
There you go. So I'm really thankful to everybody who's given us the reviews. You can go over to iTunes and help us out, help more people find the show. But again, you don't have to just be on iTunes. You can give us a review on any platform you are. And if you take a picture of that and send it to us, we'll read your review out on the show. You can also find us on Twitter @JoinNerdParty. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And those are great places to interact with us. So follow us and like us there. Talk to us there. We love getting to interact with people about the show. You can also send us an email like we got there. And you can do that over on TheNerdParty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Outpost, and then that comes to Drea and I. So it is finally time to get into the chapter, Drea, and I think one of the things that, it's not like I can say I love anything in this chapter because it's so sorrowful and it's so heartbreaking, the whole thing, but I think the thing that I really appreciate most is Harry's self-flagellation in some ways in this chapter, because it shows that not only is he a character that doesn't think more highly of himself than he ought, but he's also a character who takes very seriously the repercussions of his actions. And for a 15-year-old to be doing that is, I think, quite exciting, because I don't see many 15-year-olds act like this anymore.
I don't see a lot of people act like this, regardless of age.
No, it's very true. But Harry truly taking responsibility for the fact that he believes that it's his fault that Sirius died, and that he, if he had not been stupid enough to act on Voldemort's trick, that he, and be convinced that, and maybe even he remembers Hermione's words of like love playing the hero, like all of these things are echoing around in his mind. And the fact that he's thinking about them just shows that Harry is a character who's willing to self-reflect. And maybe I don't want to say beat himself up, but I don't know of another way to put it. Like, he is willing to put himself through the paces when he is proven to not be right, and what mistakes got him there. And yeah. I think, you know, that's a really important thing for anyone.
He takes ownership, right? He takes responsibility for the consequences, for the decisions, for things happening. And as the chapter goes on, we kind of learn how maybe he's taken a little too much responsibility for some of them. However, he is willing to take responsibility, which is not something everyone in the world, especially when you're talking about something this sort of big, are willing to do, right? A lot of people are more interested in shifting the blame or not thinking it through or just not worrying about it, right? So it's one of those moments where we see how hard Harry really is on himself and how kind of, you know, how far along in his journey he's really coming throughout all of this. And what's really interesting about this chapter is we learn a lot, like a lot, like so much in this chapter. But we also kind of revisit everything we've already learned along the way too. It's really interesting because, you know, Dumbledore, he goes year by year with Harry's progress and sort of his, you know, concerns or withholding of the information and why he sort of stepped back each time. But you really get to see Harry's evolution and growth in a very high level over the last like 5 years in this one chapter. And you really get to see how what Harry has accomplished was not Harry's making. And at the same time, it really shows how talented and how much Dumbledore admires him. So as we go through the chapter, it's just really interesting how we get like a nice little wrapped up summary of the last few books, as well as just a whole lot of information that sort of is like a fire hose of data at your face. So it's such a big chapter, even though it's not that long.
Yeah, I think what makes it so interesting is it's a recontextualization of everything that we've gotten before. And, you know, Dumbledore is about to shine a light into areas which we have not seen yet. And part of that is because it's Dumbledore and it's the character who is almost as omniscient as mm-hmm. possible in the story without being the narrator. And so he is about to basically lay out all of the things that we didn't know or couldn't piece together because we didn't have all the pieces of the puzzle, and now he's about to fill in the puzzle, you know. In many ways, we've talked about this before, that Harry Potter is kind of like this puzzle where we don't necessarily have the picture of what it's supposed to look like, but we're putting these pieces together. And this is a moment where we finally get the picture, almost. Like, this is the moment where the picture becomes apparent, you know. It's still possibly fuzzy around some of the edges, but in many ways, Rowling kind of finally puts all the cards on the table to say, this is where the rest of the series is going. This is what it's actually been about the whole time, and this is where it's going. And I think that's a really incredible thing, and it's the thing that makes this chapter so pivotal for the rest of the series, because it recontextualizes everything else that you've had beforehand, but it also sets the stage for everything that is to come. And so it's incredible that, like you said, this isn't one of her longer chapters, really, but she's still able to do that. And I think that's the thing that makes... it's also the thing that I think makes this book come into focus, too. Like, not only is it the last 4 years, but this book itself, which for many fans became a complaint and an arduous process to read. But I mean, I think she helps you see the validity of everything that she's been putting you through as a reader throughout this year as well. So, I mean, she's doing so much and when it all comes down to it, I think a very short page count, which is impressive.
Yeah, she's good at being concise when she needs to be and just giving you what she needs. She does a nice job of that. And I do think that's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but she does kind of use Dumbledore as like a narrator in this particular situation, right? But it feels appropriate that he should have all this information. It feels appropriate that now is the time to share, right? And it definitely gives us a payoff for everything we sort of suffered through this book, because this is, for me, one of the harder books to experience, between Harry feeling like angry and an outcast and the whole situation with Umbridge. Like, all of that was really difficult for me. And I think I even said that at the beginning of this book, that this was one of the harder ones for me. And while this chapter resolves a lot of that and kind of tells me my payoff, this is still kind of a hard chapter to read. It's hard to hear, you know, what Dumbledore has done and having to own up to what the situation he put Harry in, right? Everything from beginning to end. And I do love, and I know when you and I recorded the Order of the Phoenix Harry Potter movie for the 602 Club, we talked about how much you disliked the end of the movie because this chapter, it essentially is this chapter, and that you didn't really feel like it gave you the payoff that the chapter gives you. And now coming back to the chapter and reading it again, I'd agree. I'd have to agree with you now that it's
yes!
Matt wins! Yes! No.
No, it just feels good. It just feels good. Not because I won, but it really has nothing to do with that.
Except that it does.
It's just more... No, really, it's not, because it's more about the validity of how important the chapter is wins.
Yeah.
Like, the chapter itself stands to a testament to how important it is. That's the thing that I think is
really cool. I think the end for the movie is still an okay ending for the movie, only because there aren't as many loose ends to tie up because of how much gets cut out of the movies. But I do think that this chapter has such a greater impact than the end of that movie does. Mostly because I love seeing Harry just scream. I just love seeing him rage out in Dumbledore's office. And I really, really appreciated Dumbledore trying to control him a little bit, calm him down a little bit from his rage, but not because Harry shouldn't be angry. It's because Dumbledore's like, I haven't even really told you why you should be angry at me yet. Like, you're going to be even angrier when I get done telling you what's going on, right? Like, and justifiably. And I love that almost kind of like resets Harry, and he's like, wait a second, I'm so angry now, I can't even imagine being angrier. Like, he wants to run away and break stuff and hit something. He's like, I should be angrier. I don't even, it's like you could just see this, like, I don't even know how that would be possible, kind of flash over his face. And he, you know, appealed to the natural curiosity that Harry has and was able to tell him everything that's happening.
And I think, so I don't know specifically, we'll walk through, I think we're going to talk through everything, but it's not necessarily going to be linear this chapter because there's so much to talk about. So that just really brought to mind this idea to me that I think one of the reasons by the end that Harry's not angrier with Dumbledore is because Dumbledore and Harry have a lot of similarities.
Yeah, I was thinking
and
about
I think
that.
Harry, realizes the fact that Dumbledore has done to him a lot of the things that Harry has done to others and a lot of the ways in which he acts. And part of that is that their downfall here is because they cared too much in some ways. Harry cared too much for Sirius to kind of to really think through things all the way and to think of other possibilities. And in many ways, Dumbledore became a person who cared too much for Harry in the sense that he protected him from the most important thing, which is really the truth and not his feelings, which I think, if anything, may be the most pivotal thing in this book, which is Rowling saying that there are more important things than getting your feelings hurt. And the most important thing for anyone is knowing the truth, regardless of what that has to do with your feelings. And that flies in the face of everything this world tells us these days. Like, she literally just witch slapped a lot of people because it's a countercultural message now. It's amazing to me that Harry Potter is already countercultural, and it's because too many people put too much emphasis on people's feelings and not the truth. And what Dumbledore says here, and I think rightly so, is that no, more important than anyone's feelings is them actually knowing the truth. And that is huge.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because it even shows too, because we've learned about this character of Dumbledore, who in this chapter I really just saw as the evolution of Harry, right? Like, if we have the very starting point of an evolution of Harry.
Great. Oh man,
and
I love that.
The end of the evolution is Dumbledore, right? Like, it's the refined version of all of the things that Harry does, is like, you know, the polished version of that is Dumbledore. And I mean, the fact that you can even have sort of the most evolved version of whatever you want him to be, you know, teacher, mentor, wizard, even just person, right? Who still struggles with this super basic concept that truth should trump the damage it causes. like the fact that someone like that struggles with it really imparts upon you how difficult that simple philosophy really is to execute, and how it is so much easier to say it than it is to actually do it. And especially when the message is so incredibly hard to give him, and nobody wants to give someone they love the message that they are going to die. Like, it is so incredibly difficult. But it ties up a lot of strings. It ties up a lot of loose ends. It explains so much of what's going on. And this is one of the big places that the movie and the book kind of deviate. The whole scene, because we're not being linear this time, so I'm not going to worry about it. The whole scene where he talks about why Harry had to stay with the Dursleys and what that looked like and why that was so significant doesn't happen here in the movie. It happens at the beginning of the next one. And that, and it's a different situation, and all the Dursleys are there, and everyone's, it's such a completely different scenario than the book here. And I like this so much better. It makes so much sense. I feel like Dumbledore's just laying out all his cards. He's sharing pretty much everything he feels like is important and truthful in this sense here. And it makes more sense, like, naturally that the conversation would happen here. And it she does a nice job of naturally asking and answering the next question you have as a reader, right? So she starts with one and it leads to another, and he starts talking about Harry and how much he cares, and him, you know, why, oh, you may ask yourself why I didn't give you to a wizarding family. Well, here's why. And she does a nice job of naturally progressing through what you would want to know next without it seeming like forced or contrived, right? Like, it's just the natural question you have next on your mind. You don't even realize that's the one you had, but that it makes sense that you wanted to know that now. So,
well, and what I love is the way in which the beginning of the series ties into where we are in the series now, and that the reason that Dumbledore left him on the doorstep of, Aunt Petunia is because it's a thing that Voldemort cannot understand. There's a, because he said, look, as smart as Voldemort is, as much magic as he has discovered, there are still things to which he does not understand. And one of those things is the very thing that kept you alive. And in the end, it is love and the sacrifice. And so that, one, it ties all together, the idea that true love is, you know, the ultimate form of love is being able to lay your life down for another. And that is so powerful that it even continues to protect Harry beyond his mother's death. And so that as long as he could call their home his home, the blood of his sister, which is also the blood of his mother, that also flows through his veins, continues to protect him in a way that Voldemort can never touch him, because that sacrifice is still there. And so... and it still has resonance, which I think is so beautiful. And then, you know, connecting that then with the idea that we get later on in this chapter of the reason that Voldemort could never truly possess Harry is the moment when he's feeling the most love and the most pain, the most hurt. And in fact, Dumbledore even really starts this whole thing with saying the fact that you're feeling pain shows that you are different, shows that you are as human as possible and in the best way, because the pain you feel is love, and love makes us feel all sorts of things. And he even talks about the idea that, you know, in the ministry, in the Department of Mysteries, there is a room that is locked with the most powerful, destructive, awesome force known to humanity, and that force is what has not only kept you alive, but it's the force that allowed you to expel Voldemort, to which he cannot even handle, which is love. And there's a real beauty in that, and it's not just wishy-washy love, right? It is painful, sacrificial love, and that is the very thing to which Voldemort does not understand and does not care to understand. Because he shut himself off from it because he doesn't want to pay the price for what love makes us pay, right? Because in the end, right, love costs. And Voldemort doesn't want a cost for himself. And so that's why he rejects love in many ways.
Well, he doesn't
so
understand.
I love the depth.
He also truly doesn't understand it.
Yes.
It's not even that he's not willing to pay it, because as we'll come to find out in future books, that he's willing to sacrifice and make very high payments for what he wants. He just doesn't understand and can't comprehend what this looks like, because he never truly allowed himself to experience it. And mm-hmm. love is one of those things that you absolutely cannot understand from the outside, period. Everyone's looks different. Everything feels different. But when it's real and you know it. And that's so unique and so different and so incredibly powerful. So it's just one of those things where, like, Dumbledore is truly trying to tell him, the fact that you are so incredibly angry right now is actually an amazingly good sign. And it shows mm-hmm. how strong you are and how human you are. And that is the thing that is going to be to your advantage. Mm-hmm. I loved that, which then also kind of leads in to why the heck we cared about the Ministry of Magic in the, or the Department of Mysteries in the first place.
Yeah.
Dumbledore, I mean, the name of the chapter.
Before you go completely there, I just wanted to say one more thing, because I think... what I love is Phineas, the portrait of Phineas, you know, about to dive into how, these kids, they just don't understand things. And it doesn't say that Dumbledore's angry, but it just says, he says, that's enough. Because he knows, he says to Harry, there's no shame in what you're feeling. In fact, on the contrary, it's your greatest strength, the fact that you feel this pain. And what I love is that, in the end, the reason Harry feels so much pain is because he cares so much. And what makes Harry a beautiful character is he cares for people. When even Dumbledore says, I didn't realize that your upbringing would be what it is. And I can't change that. But the fact that you came to me as normal as you did, and he, you know, kind of air quotes normal, right, was amazing. You weren't as healthy and vibrant as I wanted you to be.
Like, you weren't as healthy and nourished. Yeah. Oh, you weren't happy and nourished as I had hoped, but I thought that was such an interesting statement.
But you came out better than you had any right to, basically, is what he's saying. And what we're seeing here is in many ways, the repercussions of that, because again, it's Harry being somebody who loves too much. He cares too much.
Well, and that whole situation really, for me, and what I feel like was kind of the unsaid about all of that, is that it sort of made Harry forged in fire, which made him stronger, right? Yeah. Like, if he'd had kind of a happy, privileged life, who knows if he'd be able to show up the way that he does in all of these situations, knowing that this would maybe be the first time he'd have to face some of these horrible situations. So I really just treated it as, you know, Dumbledore acknowledging that he was forged in fire. And while it was unpleasant to go through, like, it actually was... he was pleased, you know, and we're kind of seeing this very honest, very calculated version of Dumbledore saying, hey, it wasn't exactly what I wanted. Yes, I would have preferred you be happier. However, to suit the needs of what I had, it worked out for me. And for someone to be saying that to him in such a calculated way really just calmed Harry down and was like, all right, at least I'm getting the truth here.
Well, and this is, you know, this is the thing too, which I really love about this whole thing, is that, you know, there's a moment there where it's the first time for Harry that he sees Dumbledore look tired and sad. Mm-hmm. And what we see here is this then confession about, he says, look, I know you feel bad, but this is actually my fault, because I was too arrogant. And Dumbledore here really shows the fact that he's, I mean, and this is what I love about the Fantastic Beasts series, is seeing in many ways, it's about Dumbledore learning these lessons about being less arrogant and being more humble in response to who he is and his own failings. And Dumbledore here, I think, does something that's very important for manhood, which is to be able to say, I'm wrong. I was wrong. And I think Dumbledore really shows true strength of character and what true manhood is, which is to not never admit you're wrong, which is to actually admit when you're wrong. And so he does that, and he says, if I had confessed to you years ago exactly what was going on, this probably would have never happened. And the biggest part of that is that if I had told you about the connection that I believe that you have with Voldemort, which we've seen all year here really rear its ugly head, nothing that happened this year probably would have happened, because we would have been in a completely different place. But I didn't trust the truth enough. I trusted my own feelings to not want to hurt your feelings, instead of trusting the fact that you needed the truth more. And it's a really beautiful moment, because I think, again, it makes Dumbledore very human. Like, this is the first time I think Dumbledore becomes a human being in the series, for the most part. Like, we really see his own failings, but we also see his strengths, and two, his own care and love for people, which, you know, like, all of this together, I think it's so powerful for us to finally get this.
Yeah, I think it makes the character even stronger by showing him make errors, by showing his weaknesses, by showing the things mm-hmm. that he needs to learn from and has learned from. But and I think that makes that character that much bigger, right? Because I think those who can admit their mistakes and learn from their mistakes and take those learning opportunities, and kind of going back to what we talked about at the very beginning, owning all of that, that just, I think, makes you such a stronger person and kind of more trustworthy, and I don't know, just all around. I think that's a great trait to have. And so it really makes him an even more admirable character than we kind of already admired him and his skill, right? And before we get into maybe specifics of the actual prophecy and all of that, I do love how flattering he was to Harry, but in a very real way. He had specifics. He wasn't just like, oh, you were awesome. Oh, you were strong and great. He had specific examples in which he's like, I found that at one point he says something like, you fought that like a man. Like, you fought that like an adult, right? You handled that situation. He's like, I could not be more proud of you and how you've done. And I think that's something Harry's been missing for about a book or a book and a half, is someone looking him in the eye, sitting him down, acknowledging his strife, and telling them how proud he is. He doesn't have that parent figure anymore, and I think he really needed to hear that.
You know, that's the thing where, you know, Dumbledore says to him earlier, he's like, I understand you feeling like this, and you have every right to feel this. I mean, you lost your parents, and now you've lost the thing to which you were considering somewhere between a father and a brother. So everything that's been taken away from you, I'm not discounting. In fact, and where he's complimentary to Harry is basically saying what we've said this whole time, which is, there's no way you should be who you are, and I just can't believe that you are who you are. The strength that you have, the character, the internal character that you have, the fact that you choose right instead of wrong, that you care so much, that you love so much, all of these things blow me away. And in many ways, I think Harry and Dumbledore, because of their similarities, the thing that blows Dumbledore away is the way in which Harry has kind of rejected some of the things that Dumbledore himself had trouble rejecting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what is so beautiful. I really appreciate that so much. And I think that's one of the things that Dumbledore sees in Harry. And here, like you said, he kind of lavishes that praise on him. And again, it's Dumbledore taking responsibility for the fact that he is the adult. And if he had just told Harry the truth and trusted him to be able to handle this, that we wouldn't be in this situation he was in. In fact, it was Dumbledore withholding information from Harry that gets them into this position, because Harry was also trying to put a puzzle together without the picture.
Yeah. It's interesting because he basically, when we talked a little bit about it, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but we talked about the whole truth and how important that is. But I feel like in this story, this is where Dumbledore really lays it out and explains out that he made a calculated risk decision and to not tell Harry these things. By doing that, both were risks, and he needed to sort of assess which one was greater, which one could he control more, which one could he sort of stay a few steps ahead of, which we talked about a few episodes ago. He always seemed to be a couple steps ahead, right? And I think this is where he finally kind of lays that out and ultimately kind of comes to the conclusion that, hey, my risk assessment was wrong. I should have just told you. I should have trusted you to know. I should have trusted that this got out. That would have been the right call. And I now have to live with the consequences of that decision. And so it's so interesting that he has this very adult, very mature conversation with Harry. And Harry's doing his best to sort of process his way through it, but doesn't really have a lot to say in this chapter. He screams a lot at the beginning and then doesn't really say a lot as we go through. Still very defensive of Sirius as we go through the conversations, and, you know, don't blame him. Why do you blame him? And don't blame Snape and that sort of thing. But we learn a lot about how things came to be the way they are. Like, how did the Order of the Phoenix know to show up? How did they know why he was there? Like, you know, why did all of that happen? We literally just get all of those details explained out to us.
Yeah. What I love, just to hit on the Sirius point, which was the strengths that Sirius has, but, you know, the fact that Dumbledore has to also remind him of the weaknesses that Sirius had, and his main weakness was the way that he treated Creature. And what I love here is that Rowling shows the failings of human nature and how much trouble we have overcoming things as human beings. And for Sir Sirius, that is overcoming the way in which Creature makes him feel when he's at Grimmauld Place, which is, it reminds him of all the things that he grew up with, all the pain that, you know, Sirius grew up with. Sirius didn't have a great upbringing, we are reminded of. And so the way he treats Creature is his way of taking that out on something that reminds him of the pain that he suffered. But that's not the right thing to do. And in fact, what we see here in many ways is that everybody in this chapter kind of suffers from not being able to be more like Harry, which is to be somebody who should be angry and taking his pain out on the world and yet isn't. In fact, the only place that he's taking his pain out is on Dumbledore's collection of artifacts. Yeah. Dumbledore has no problem with allowing him to do, because he also understands that Harry needs this catharsis of being angry. Like, Harry is... the things in Harry's life has earned him the right to be angry at this point. And I think that's the most important thing that Rowling does here in this book, is that there is a time and a place for anger. And there's a time and a place for it to need to come out. And in many ways, it's the thing that allows, I will say this because it's the most important thing. If Harry doesn't go through this, he will not be the person he needs to be to defeat Voldemort in the end. Spoiler alert, you know, Harry wins in the end, guys. I don't think that's a spoiler for anyone.
If it is, apologies.
Yeah, sorry. But I think that's the most beautiful thing about this, is that this is the point in the process where Harry does need a breakdown, and this is the moment he gets it. And so I think it's really interesting to watch other characters not be able to kind of be more Harry-like, because both Sirius and Snape fall into that same trap, which is they can't let go of their past enough to be able to move forward and act the way that they should.
They just don't take the time to process it, right? Like, they're not willing to process it. They're not willing to go through those things because they're painful, right? Just like we talked about with Voldemort earlier, not being willing to go through love because it's painful, right? It's not being willing to go through things that are painful because they're painful, right? But you have to kind of endure that pain and pay that price to come out bigger, stronger, better, more secure, you know, moving on, whatever that looks like on the other side. So that theme really plays through this chapter and really all of the books, but it's really showing that you have to go through and endure and come out stronger on the other side and make that decision to get the benefit of that you've gone through, right? Like, if you're bullied, you have to process through it. You have to forgive. You have to move on. You have to become a better person from it in order for that to really be a sacrifice for something you can for good. And so I think that there's just so much to this, and it paints the fact that it shows how important it is to do something about it. And that doesn't mean you just take it and stuff it deep down inside and make your peace with it, you know, nice and neat. You are like Harry, you break stuff or you yell or you feel selfish or you express all of that. Those are all okay things to do, but you have to live through them and push through them and then try to see the other side. So it's just so, it's such a big chapter and it has so much to it. And I think the most important part we haven't touched on quite yet, I think it's just the prophecy itself and why we're in this situation and what this sort of inevitable bond between Voldemort and Harry actually looks like. And I love the story behind the prophecy. I love it for a couple of reasons. I love it because it involves one of our kind of tertiary characters that we sort of grew to like, but she still kind of drives us up the wall a little bit, right? Especially Harry. Involves Trelawney, right? It also speaks to, it brings a little bit, because we talked a lot about how divination was sort of a joke and this made up thing, but there was some reason why we were studying it. There's some reason why we were spending so much time with it, even though it kind of seemed like this throwaway thing. So we get a little bit of legitimacy there. And I love that this is one of those times where we find out how similar sort of Dumbledore and Harry are when we talk about the fact that the prophecy happened at not at the three broomsticks, but at the Leaky Cauldron, and how that was the place where he was overheard by somebody. And Dumbledore's like, well, you're not the only one who's had that happen to them. So there's just a bunch of parts to this that I really enjoy in the chapter much more than we get in any of the movies.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because, you know, obviously Trelawney is there to apply for the job of divination teacher. And, you know, Dumbledore is about to walk away when this prophecy starts coming out of her mouth. And he's disappointed because she doesn't have the gift, you know, and he's not going to hire her. But the moment this prophecy comes out, he realizes not only does he need to hire her because she should be at the school because she can prophesy things, but it's more important that he's going to want to protect her, because he knows that if Voldemort ever returns, she's going to be number one on his list, because she's the one who gave this prophecy, which is that the Dark Lord will be vanquished by one that Voldemort himself marks as his equal. The way he will know that person is that it was born of people who have thrice defeated him. I love that word. Defied him, and then is born as the seventh month dies. So he only hears the first part of this. He doesn't hear the whole thing, which is that neither can live while the other survives.
And we don't exactly know who it is, but I'm pretty sure it's like Peter Pettigrew or someone like that.
Yeah, we'll learn about that later. So, but the thing I love here is that Voldemort acts on unclear information. Like, he doesn't have all of the pieces of the puzzle. And so by him acting And choosing Harry, he's chosen the very one that would be the one that could destroy him, but he doesn't know that.
I love that Harry's the one who brings it up. Well, Dumbledore brings it up, but he says something like, you know, there were two possible children that this could have applied to, right? It's you and it's Neville. And I love that Harry's like, so why me? Like, it could still be Neville, right? It could still be Neville. It's not just me. Why is it, you know, why is everyone doing all this for me? And I love that he goes on to explain that basically Voldemort made the choice himself.
And the most interesting thing about this is he says Voldemort chose a boy just like him, which is not a boy of pure blood like Neville is, but a boy with half blood. You. And so this whole thing begins to play in, like, we're seeing all these pieces come together. And the fact that in many ways Voldemort took that information and he saw Harry as being just like him, and so he's the one who marked Harry as being the one who would be his equal. And he had no idea that Harry's mother would try to sacrifice herself for him and that all that would happen. And so I think the beauty of this is that we get the setting of the stage that there is going to be a showdown and one of them is going to have to die. And yet we still feel, I think, even with this chapter, there still feels like there's going to be more for us to learn. And I think that's the thing that I'm really excited about, is that, yes, she really does a great job with laying everything at our feet that we need to know to set up where we're going to go, and that there is going to be more information along the way, which I think is fantastic.
Right. We get so much here, but it's not everything. It's not that we're not going to learn anything new. It's not that this is kind of the end of all that information. It's just fallout. Now there's still more to learn. There's still stuff that, you know, you're led to believe like this is most of everything we need to know so far, but there's probably more out there that we don't know. Like, we don't exactly know what the connection between him and Voldemort is. We just kind of know that it has to do with you can get in each other's minds a little bit, and that it was because of his mom and Voldemort. Like, we get a good grasp on what it is, but there's still some, like, well, how does you break it? How, you know, there's still lots of questions that arise from this, but not so many that you feel like you need answered right now. And I do love at the very, very end, Dumbledore says something along the lines of, like, I feel like I owe you one more explanation. And you're like, oh gosh, what are we going to learn now? Right? You're like holding your breath. And then he's like, you're probably wondering why I didn't make you prefect. Well, I thought you had enough on your plate already. And just like the simplicity of it and sort of the fact that Dumbledore acknowledges that even though something like not being prefect isn't like a life-altering or ginormous undertaking and decision like everything else he's already told Harry, right? He it shows he still understands on a day-to-day basis what is important to Harry. Like, he can still stop, take a step back, look at it and go, oh, well, that probably hurt your feelings too. Sorry about that, right? Like, he's able to see both big and small and didn't want Harry to feel like the feelings and the thoughts on that were insignificant. You know, he wanted to throw that out there. But also, it wasn't like, I don't know, it was a little insignificant, but he understands that it still was an important part of Harry's world. And that it probably caused him a little bit of strife and suffering this year. So
the thing about this is that this answers, I think, all of the questions that we've been having, you know, like all of the things that we've really been wondering about. This does a great job of taking the entire book, putting it all into context for us and helping us understand the why of everything from the beginning of the series till now. It really helps, again, it just recontextualizes everything from, like you mentioned, even to the smallest place of mentioning where the whole spew idea really kind of comes into play in this book, you know, with the way that creature is treated, the idea of, you know, the relationship between Snape, Harry, and, you know, Snape's dad, Harry's dad, James, all comes into play. And so we're just doing such a great job of bringing all of these things together more closely now so that she can really take those next two books and just move forward, which I think is going to be just so fantastic. And I can't wait to get there. You know, the last chapter is going to set up where we're going to go completely in the order of in the Half-Blood Prince. And so, I would love to hear people. The things that really stood out to you. I think this is really a chapter where I would love to hear from people. You know, so hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. Let us know what you think once the episode is out. Because I feel like there's just so much jam packed into this chapter, and I'm sure there's probably a few things that we may have missed along the way. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I remember reading this chapter when this book first came out and realizing, oh, this is the key. Like this is the most important thing she's ever told us in the series so far. And it was the moment where you just kind of realized this is where we're going towards the end now, because she just revealed so much. And so I can't wait to get there now. I can't wait. So Drea, if people want to, you know, catch up with you, see how everything is going, and of course talk about this pivotal chapter, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name MattRushing02. I am here on the network with John Mills doing Aggressive Negotiations, talking all about Star Wars each and every week. So if you love Star Wars, that's the place for you. I'm also on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One, when we get a chance, Chris Jones and I talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine on The Orb. I'm also doing the General Geek Show, which is called the 602 Club. As Drea mentioned, we talked about all of the Harry Potter films over there, so you can check that out, as well as all the other fandoms that we're talking about. And then last but not least, doing a show with my good friend Courtney called Cinema Stories, and that was where we talk about films, but through the lens of faith. But we want to say thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.